This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
There's something suspect in here. He does seem to strike his arm, and maybe the reactions of Jay Rodriguez. He's not up and celebrating. He maybe thinks, I'm not going to get away with this.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
For Grealish. Oh, wonderful play here. Balassi. Abraham must! And it is not his night.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of MyOldManSaid.com. Joining me for the post-Baggies autopsy, Dan Rogers from the villaunderground.com and international DJ Chris Budd. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hello, hello.
Good evening, gentlefolk.
So, last time we spoke, Mr. Rogers,
yep.
you were telling us your plans of infiltrating the Smethwick
Brummie Road in.
Isn't it the Bob Taylor stand or some?
Yeah, what stand did you go into?
Birmingham Road End. But Brummie Road End.
So we were talking last episode about ways you were going in the home end and getting away with it. Just go for the complete mad insanity. I am mad and I am insane.
Hey, look, I can pull off readily.
And the other option, which we didn't actually talk about, was that the chameleon routine, where you basically become one of them. So when they got that dubious equaliser, was it you running on the pitch celebrating the draw?
No, because
just to fit in.
Do you know what I was? As mentioned in the last pod, I was feeling dreadfully unwell, and that was the moment. I think it was the 93rd minute where it became terminal for me, and rigor mortis set in, because I think if the camera, I'd like to see the fan camera of that end of the ground, because I must be the only person rigidly stood in disbelief whilst the fucking world erupted around me. And for all those doubters who'd been sat around me, as I had a couple of moments in the game. One was where John McGinn thumped the post.
What about El Ghazi when he's hit that rocket in?
It was a bit like your moment that you mentioned in the last pod at Highbury, where you were out of your seat and I was like, oh, good, oh, I don't believe it. One of those sort of...
Oh, I don't believe it.
That's an outrage. Oh, my God. It was, do you know what? It was such a hard 90 minutes to watch unfold. And when that happened at the end, oh, God. I can't even, you can
imagine. So were you outed, or did you manage to slip out?
No, I think there was a couple of suspicious people. And I think at that moment, the guy who was immediately to my left, who I'd been elbowing at Guy Villa moments for 90 minutes, realised when I just gave the grimace, like a Wallace and Gromit style, time to leave. And do you know what? It was amazing what sitting amongst them. I mean, I did have to obviously hide my hands because I don't have hooves for fingers and webbed feet or anything like that.
He wear mittens.
Did you need a translation book as well?
But it's interesting to sit amongst other fans of another club and what their perceptions of Villa are. They hate Grealish. They were staggered by Glenn Whelan's receding hairline when he came onto the pitch. Key things.
Right. Well, on the show, we'll obviously talk about the Baggies game and debrief from that. And we'll have a look at the current form table and what kind of impact Villa's form has actually made in the promotion picture, whether it's automatic or the playoffs. And we also see the return of Where Were You When We Were Good, where we'll be going back to December 1995, where the only West Midlands derby in the Premier League at the time was Villa versus Coventry. No sign of the Baggies, no sign of the Blues or those Wolves pretenders. So we'll look at the time we tonked them 4-1 back in the days where I think they still hadn't won at Villa Park for about 60 years. Well, they had never won at Villa Park. Those were the days. Anyway, first of all, 3 points. And the first point, the need for VAR. And we'll start by connecting it to what happens in that fateful injury time at the Hawthorns. Two moments, actually. There was that ridiculous foul throw where the ball didn't even bounce into play before it entered the field of play. The referee, it was parallel with it.
He wasn't even looking there.
The linesman also should have seen that. Oh, it just shows that they don't actually know the laws of the games. I mean, people, when it comes to foul throws, they say it's pedantic, but, you know, rules are rules.
That was a ridiculous foul throw. It wasn't
that
like
was,
you could
it
say,
was proper
do you know what?
Sunday league, wasn't it?
It was
so
a joke.
Bad.
And then obviously the ball's bundled in. And Nyland, because he's like Dracula when it comes to crosses, obviously didn't get there. And he, when he attacked the ball, the ball was so low when he should have been up high and caught it, basically, is what I'm saying. And obviously Jay Rodriguez, he wasn't even sheepish. He didn't even expect to score that goal, did he?
No.
Controlled over his hand, then put it in, and he just laid there knowing this wasn't going to be given. Wasn't much of a celebration from the Baggies players initially, and nobody in the ground really thought that was a goal.
Well, I was stood 5 yards away, and I could assure you the last thing I thought was that it was going to be given. The crazy thing about it, about the whole thing, was you had that the bonkers build-up where, even live, that looked like a foul throw. It obviously leads into the cross. And I have to say, Albion's crossing had been woeful all night. Yeah. I don't think it was a great cross, but Nyland is so... He allows so much space. Instead of attacking that cross, and like you say, it was at a nice height, he almost wants to allow the ball to come across him before collecting. And Rodriguez doesn't have to change his run to get in front of him. He just puts his body in between, you know, and puts his arms up, I think anticipating a stronger challenge that never comes from the keeper, sprawls it down, and then obviously knocks it in with his hands. And I mean, what do you say, really? That I think that the craziest thing about it is we're going to mention VAR. But I think the most alarming thing of all of this, if we're asking for VAR, the linesman, the referee's assistant, has got a completely unobstructed, clear view of everything that happens and completely misses it.
They had that little deliberation as well before
that
they...
That makes it worse. They've clearly had a chat and gone, did you see what happened?
The guy's testicles receded into him in that moment and he couldn't give the decision.
He completely bottled it.
He did.
Yeah. And that's the thing, it does cover up Nyland's weakness there. Because at the very least, he should have been out there, attacked the ball and punched it away before it...
He should have just flattened him.
The thing is, that is the reason why you need promotion, because waiting whoever's in the Premier League next season is the introduction of VAR. So if there's an incentive, the irony is obviously the lack of VAR may cost us getting promoted. But we'll see what happens in the second half of the season. But I'd rather have it in. I mean, I've always advocated for it. And as long as it's implemented properly in terms of communicating to the supporters what's happening, and they obviously managed to make the decisions quickly. And if you can watch it on TV and you know that was a handball straight off the bat, there's no need for 30 seconds deliberation, is there?
Well, I think everybody would, in a moment like that, in such an important moment, you'd happily have the 30 seconds to get the right decision. You know, it works really well in rugby and they have huge stoppages, but they get the right decision and no one argues. It's the same in cricket. It's the same in other sports.
And I don't think it would take 30 seconds either. I think that's the thing with this decision, is that it was such a bad call that I think if you have the fourth official in the referee's ear, because it wasn't the referee's fault in this instance, he has to look to his assistant for guidance. Yeah. And if he was unsighted, That's not his fault. But the fourth official watching that live, like every other human being with eyeballs that functioned, could see that that was a handball.
Yeah.
You know, for me, VAR is for contemptuous decisions. The was it over the line? Was it over? Wasn't it over the line? That sort of thing.
Every week there'll be something where VAR, you know, VAR would have come in and solved it, and nobody would have argued about it. You know, there were maybe one or two, if I remember, in the World Cup, a couple of moments where there were borderline decisions or where they didn't go to VAR. But if it's there, I don't know why you wouldn't use it. And as you guys have said, for the goal on against the Baggies, you'd only really need like one, maybe two angles, two quick looks. Oh, yeah, that's clearly it. Great, done. It's not one of these ones that's going to take you ages and it's a really borderline decision.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on let's talk about the Premier League quickly. Oh, my God. Liverpool are top of the league, unbeaten. I actually watched their game against Bournemouth. It's one of the first games I've
ever... absolutely battered them, didn't they, as well?
It wasn't a 4-0 result, if you know what I mean. It was a bit closer. It's just Liverpool had a bit more going forward. Anybody who's of a certain generation would have... when I was born, Liverpool were champions. And the last time they won the league was when Villa were in the title race with them under Graham Taylor, 1989-90 season. And that was the last time they won it, which is incredible to think if you were around in those days, because they won it, I think, 10 times in 15 seasons before that. That was the 10th time they won it in the last 15 seasons. The only teams to stop them was Everton twice, Forest, Villa, and Arsenal. And that was that infamous game where Arsenal needed to win 2-0 in the last game at Anfield, and nobody won at Anfield. And somehow Michael Thomas, late, I think it was last minute. That was probably one of the most dramatic finishes I've seen. Liverpool since have been, and Manchester United have overtaken them with league titles. Is it 2018 at the moment, the current score?
I think so.
Yeah, I think
it's been a long time.
How would you feel? I mean, how do you feel about Liverpool?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I think it's good for Man City to actually have some, like, a proper challenger this year. You know, last year it was so one-sided, it was a joke. I think it'll be a really interesting sort of season the longer it goes on to see how Pep, you know, sort of reacts. I think it will definitely make the games when they play each other a bit more juicy, because I think last season there were never really any what you'd call those really big championship six-pointer games, because City were always, you know, they started strong and were out from the word go. They're out, you know, way in front. It didn't really matter if they lost the odd game. I mean, I don't begrudge, you know, if Liverpool, you know, Liverpool actually play really good football and they're a very good side. I don't mind Klopp. If they were to win the title, you'd say they're probably a worthy winner, because this Man City team are ridiculous. You know, would I look forward to the barrage of Scouse aftermath? Probably not for the next 15 years. But
well, it's funny. It's like, to me, maybe it's because I'm of a certain generation, but I still don't count Manchester City title wins as counting because they've just bought it.
I think everyone looks at Man City, and in terms of, nobody will treat them as one of the big boys until they do it in Europe, and they're still yet to. You know, they've spent so much bloody money. Same as PSG, really. You know, they can flatten their domestic league because they've got infinite resources.
Because they're owned by a country,
it's sovereign wealth, isn't it? But then you put them up against the big boys in Europe. I can't remember who it was City lost to earlier in the year. Was it Lyon or someone like that? They lost to Lyon at home in the Champions League, and they can't fill the ground. It's like they are not at that level of a superpower yet.
No.
They're a very rich club and they play brilliant football, and that is indisputable, but they are so far off being a Real Madrid, a Barcelona,
just a quick message to Wes Edens and Nassif. Villa is still fifth in the most top-tier title wins. We're above Manchester City, so if you could just get your act together just to make sure they don't close that gap and overtake us in the next decade, that would
be... save a bit of face, really.
That'd be much appreciated. We want to stay in the top five. Anyway, moving on to point three. The South American saga or the Argentinian saga, should I be more specific, has ended with River Plate beating Boca Juniors in Madrid 3-1 after extra time, and they celebrated to the tune of "It's a Long Way to Tipperary," which
is not a traditional South American anthem, is it?
Not really. There is a link, although it's a bit of a weird one, because "A Long Way to Tipperary," the first coach of the Boca Juniors, the losers, was a Tipperary man, Paddy McCarthy, born in County Tip. This is back in the days, if you know anything about football, and I'm sure most of you know everything about football, that's why you're listening to this podcast, but there's a lot of people out there who know nothing about football. Just log on to Twitter and give yourself 5 minutes on there. 5 minutes on Twitter will leave you with a conclusion that the majority of people know fuck all about football. Anyway, let's move on. but no, the history of it's quite fascinating how lots of Scots and Irish bought football to South American countries and Central America as well. I remember I had a Mexican flatmate a few years ago, and she would always tell me her father was a complete football nut, and he would tell her stories about essentially how a few Scottish guys bought football to Mexico. And it goes back to shipbuilding, isn't it, back in the day?
I believe so.
Also the Welsh as well. So there are and what you will often see with many South American teams. And the only reason I know this is I had a gambling problem in my university days where I was obsessed with South American football because it was on in the middle of the night. and basically, you'd often see as you do the colours of predominantly northern English towns or traditional shipbuilding towns, so Sunderland and places like that, where the shipbuilding went to South America and their skills went to South America. And what do you do in your spare time as working men, as they were in those days in England and Ireland and Scotland? You set up a football team, and so a lot of the lineages of those clubs trace back.
And obviously the Scots played a big, big part in the building the foundations of Aston Villa as well.
Absolutely.
The lion is of a very Scottish design.
Well, and that theme of industry often runs back, and you know, we don't need this to become a history lesson, but I think that you can see that there are trends of those roots of the Industrial Revolution and the big cities and the working masses, as it was then, and how that drift of people formed some of the powerhouses that still exist today.
All of it fascinating.
Oh yeah, bore you to death.
This week just gone was we had a second part meeting at Villa Fan Consultation Group. You may remember a couple of podcasts ago we discussed Christian Perslow, the new Villa CEO's first meeting with the Fan Consultation Group. He came up with the idea that we would meet the senior operations staff to talk about the minutiae of Villa issues. So we met up again with about five people, I think, from Villa. Discussed the rest of the stuff. The first thing I kept pushing, I wanted an answer on what happened to these two European clubs that were meant to be our feeder clubs, or that we were going to share intel with, that Keith Wynas had promised would be more than likely signed up in the summer just gone. And they just basically turned their nose up and says it just doesn't work. So that's been kiboshed. So no European, Scandinavian feeder clubs for the Villa. We had a big meaty discussion on the whole catering queues and speeding up the half-time thing. They reckon there's no silver bullet for it.
Which is absolute rubbish.
Yeah, because it's just the staff are so bloody casual, is my observations. But we're not gonna don't go into a rant about this.
I'll rant separately on it.
And then they're working on a Wi-Fi solution. They've had a couple of the companies. I think they have some kind of 4G network now, which is Vodafone. But they're trying to. They've met with EE and I think O2, although O2.
Good luck with that.
Good luck with that one.
Yeah, I was down last week.
So we'll see what happens with that FA Cup game. It's going to be a cheapo one, £10 adult tickets for Swansea, seven seniors, £5 for juniors. They had an offer to screen it live on TV, the Villa-Swansea game, which would have meant a switch to Sunday, but they resisted it because they wanted that 3 p.m., which was a good move in my book, anyway. Mm. Anyway, check out this week. The notes will be out. One final thing. I did contest about this AVTV overseas stream, which was out of sync yet again, the audio for the Forest game. And I said, well, what about doing taking a pound off, because you are charging a pound more than any other championship team, and making it £5 for the individual game for 2019. But basically, they tell me to fuck off. Anyway, they said no. Just before we move on, a quick shout out to the patrons that have signed up in the last few days. Thank you very much to them. Tim Murphy, John Gillis, Charles Rashley, Jacob Sharnick, Philip Linz, Jonathan Akins, Kieran Connolly and Virginia Simpson. Also, thanks to Patrick Downs and Lou Roberts for upping their pledge as well. For 2019, we are definitely we're going to up the game on the patrons and have regular podcasts and extra content, because this is the way we can build the podcast per se and the website and actually keep it going, because we've been deliberating, is it worth keeping My Old Man Said going? We obviously enjoy it a lot, but at the end of the day, you know, the concept of providing content for free has never really been much of a sustainable model. So much appreciated to everybody who supported us in the past and the present and the future. And please do become a patron by going to myomansed.com and clicking on the patron link. And one immediate thing we're looking forward to is upgrading the equipment of the podcast so we can actually have a cleaner track, so we can edit it much quicker and get the show out quicker, but also do have time to do an extra show. We could probably do about 10 extra shows in the time it takes to do one at the moment. Hopefully by the time you listen to this podcast, we'll finally have the My Old Man Said podcast t-shirt out, which is the album cover. I used to have an edition of this about 3 years ago, which sold well, actually. So this one's updated and a better one. It's the kind of design that will last forever. There's no manager's names on it or anything like that.
I mean, what I find with Christmas jumpers is you need one every year. So you should go to villaunderground.com/Christmas.
Exactly. I'm going to do that now. I'll leave you guys to finish off.
That's a great idea. What about you, Christopher?
I'm going to bookmark it. For every year.
I'll leave you guys to finish off the show. Right, let's get on to talking about the Baggies game. It was actually a rare game, this, the 2-2 at Hawthorns, because it was one of the first times in recent weeks that we've actually given up possession. Baggies ended up with 52% of the possession. We had 48%. I mean, from the game I watched, it seemed that we were bossing it most of the time, so that possession may just be them passing it around the back, or, you know, whatever, kind of tenuous. But it was a pretty even game, I think, overall. Although I think we just had slightly more chances and probably the better chances throughout the game.
I think it went as a lot of the pundits would have expected it to. You know, it's two teams who are pretty good going forward. Well, from the stats, it's the two high scoring teams, but defensively, two teams that are there for the taking, and it kind of was proven in the end.
Yeah, I think at the start of the game, if you told me it's going to be 2-2, then, you know, you think, yeah, that's probably to be expected. But let's say midway second half, I thought we had control of the game. We were obviously 2-1 up,
and
the insect missed a couple of.
I agree.
Well, he squandered a couple of chances. Sorry, the insect. I'm referring to Tammy Abraham. I think we mentioned the alternate commentary of the Blues game highlights where the guy who's doing the commentary refers to him as an insect, i.e. Like a praying mantis. And he does look like, he has the same kind of limb, the limb structure of a praying mantis. And his limbs are actually, the praying mantis's extendable legs were actually mentioned by Dean Smith after the game, because he was praising him for scoring the other week with his extendable legs, but this time they kind of got in the way. The most glaring miss was the one where he was just kept pointing where he wanted it from Balassi, and he was so off balance from all this pointing. And I mean, come on, Balassi's a decent level player. He'll know how to cross it to you, and he's been one of the best deliverer of the balls so far this season for Villa. It was a simple ball to play in as well, and because he was so kind of worked up, pointing, wanting the ball, that when the ball finally came, he, all his limbs were all over the place. But I think if that went in, it's game over.
It was interesting watching Albion up close, actually, because I thought that we were two quite different teams. I think that there was two sides that really did play as teams, but I thought that Villa, in terms of individuals, had more quality across the pitch, and My reading of it was very similar around the thing like the Abraham miss, but I think there were key moments in it. You know, if McGinn's fierce strike hits the back of the net in the first half, if Abraham doesn't scuff his shot in the second, and also, you know, the two, when Grealish and, was it Abraham as well, he got cleaned out for the penalty appeal in the second half? I think if those decisions go the other way, I think that would have been a much more straightforward looking game. As it happened, it panned out differently.
Yeah, and also if Hutton didn't get mugged with that, before their first goal, basically he got the ball and he just needed to clear it.
Yeah.
Just put it in the stand. That goal reminded me of the year we got relegated. It was one of those just comedy of errors from start to finish.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing with Hutton, and that we had a very brief chat last week on the pod in the last couple of weeks, perhaps around, you know, the rightful recognition of that fantastic goal that Hutton scored against the Blues. But Al Mohammadi, in my view at least, is the more complete player. You know, it's not everyone's cup of tea, but I think in the system that we play at the moment, it brings us more balance. And the Albion goal back that got them back into the game, positionally there were big question marks over Hutton because the guy got the run on him, and then when as you just mentioned, he recovered, anything but what he chose to do, I think, would have been the better outcome. The only other thing I would pick up on defensively for us was that Chester had a good game, but yeah. He was every opportunity, as I had a pretty good vantage point from where I was, every opportunity where the ball went dead or the ball went further up the field, he was trying to work some movement into his knee. He really struggled at times, and it was it caught my eye because, I had the opportunity to really watch him, I think, and it just worried me, especially as the second half wore on, that his movement was really struggling.
Well, some good news for you, because Elmo more than likely will be playing right back in the next game, because Neil Taylor will be out for a few weeks with his hammy. So we're reverting back to the Hutton left back, Elmo right back setup that obviously played the majority of last season.
I really don't mind that, you know, because I think actually Al Mohammadi's been one of our most consistent performers this year. You know, in a season when so many of our players have been inconsistent, he's actually had one of his, you know, better spells in a Villa shirt.
What about the loss of the balance of having a left footer on the in the left back position?
Yeah, I think the thing that helps us now is you look at the guys we've got in wide positions, you know, Al Ghazi and Bolasie, and even, you know, obviously we've got Adoma. We've actually got genuine winger options, so you don't necessarily have to worry about your fullbacks bombing on as much. You know, they can kind of let the wingers do the work and pin the opposition back a little bit, which certainly someone like Bolasie, and out of the way Al Ghazi's been playing in the last couple of games, which I think he's, you know, vastly improved. I think Smith will be reasonably confident that actually teams will be playing against Villa a bit worried about bombing on too far, because certainly with the pace of those two, we could rip teams apart on the break.
People were kind of moaning about Bolasie and saying he would look tired, but I thought, you know, he was giving him problems all the time, and obviously he was just subbed to obviously freshen up a bit at the end.
I think that's his style as well, and he's still, you know, easing himself into games. You know, I think it's good, you know, after this game, you know, we've got the break between the Stoke game and then another reasonable break. There's no midweek games for a few weeks now, which I think will really help Smith, A, tactically, and probably with injuries, just to let people have a bit of a rest.
Yeah. What I would say about Bolasie is that he was completely overshadowed by an unbelievable performance from Al Ghazi. I think that the benchmark for that game came on the other flank with, you know, this Dutchman who's appeared out of nowhere the last couple of weeks, that I you know, only really started to appreciate at the Albion game. We saw a glimpse of it against Forest, how technically fantastic he is. I thought some of his movement off the ball, he's got this not unique necessarily, but quite a distinctive upright running style as well, that a couple of people have dangerously referred to as being Ronaldo-esque. But it does have that, it's a noticeable thing.
He's got that metrosexual look as well.
Well, you term it as you like. I think from my point of view is that what we saw is that fantastic layoff from Grealish for his second goal. We've got cleaned out, by the way. And a real that fantastic body shaping. There's a great still on one of the newspapers used of the ball just having been released for his strike. And it's such an arrowed, pure hit.
Well, he just cut through it. It's like a kind of a golf shot or something.
And it was, it was unstoppable from Johnston's point of view. But there were other moments across the game for Al Ghazi where now he's got a bit of confidence. You see it coming.
Yeah. And I think that's what the goals gave him. But if you take away those goals, there were some real neat touches.
Oh, fantastic.
As you say, throughout the game, which you said earlier on about both teams played like teams, but you could see that Villa had a bit more quality and a bit more, let's say, panache, and Al Ghazi definitely had that. And we spoke a little bit about him in the last episode, and as I said, he was good the first game against Reading. You thought, oh, technically he's really good, really sound, very comfortable. But then he just seemed to kind of drop out of the picture, because I don't think he was really... He went kind of missing in, let's say, the tougher games where we needed a midfielder, you know, to really chase around and be present and dictate. And I think that's what they've probably been focusing on, is just, you know, giving him a kick up the backside and saying, look, this is the English game, mate. But he's strong.
He's physically strong,
isn't he? Strong, and if he's confident and he starts to believe it, then he's going to be very dangerous.
I think there's one final thing I'll say on El Ghazi is that, you know, we have all the, you know, get all the banter and sitting where I was sat, you heard a lot of anti-Villa things, but there was two or three times across the game where you can hear the collective murmur of football fans appreciating something that was very, very good. One was the goal, and you can hear, yeah. I heard a number of Albion fans, you know, we were all sat down the line of the goal where we were as well, and you can't help but say, well, that's a great strike. But there was two or three tricks that he pulled where he completely skinned the fullback.
Yeah.
And where people just were going, well, you know, that's just excellent, you know, and you can't...
Give them the league title now.
Well, you know.
Get them out of this bloody division.
Why delay the inevitable? They've got this Dutch master, a throwback to the 70s.
It's going to be total football for the next 6 months.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Speaking of total football and the high press, which where obviously the Dean Smith school comes from, you should go on YouTube, Google... Holland High Press 1974. I think they used it a lot in the 74 World Cup. It's hilarious. You'll see the high press like you've never seen it before. It resembles more like, you remember like kids when they're 5 years old and you see them in the playground and everybody's chasing the football and nobody holds position. Everybody just chases the ball.
It's a rush.
Well, this is like, you know, you grow up, you hear about this team from this, you know, the Dutch team in the 70s, this total football. And then you see this clip, which I hadn't seen. I only saw it this week. And it's the first time I've seen this 74 team, apart from goal highlights.
Mm.
And the ball breaks free. Like, for example, a German player gets it. And then suddenly there's six Dutch players running at him. And it's like, fuck.
He's just kicking anyway.
It literally is hilarious. And there's one bit where there's a... I think ball drops down from a 50-50 and there's like one opposition player going for it and then suddenly eight Dutch players running for that ball. So even if that opposition player gets there first, he's totally surrounded and he can't release the ball. And all you got to do is obviously dink it over them upfield and, you know, they're through with a kind of a five against one scenario. But it's fascinating to see the press in its purest form, which is basically they should renamed it Bum Rush because that's what it is essentially.
They wouldn't have lasted 5 minutes against McGinney Esther though. He'd have flattened the lot of them.
But it is like a swarm. It's quite fascinating to watch. Well, we've kind of discussed the actual goal that obviously sealed the deal. 50% goalkeepers, well, 100% goalkeepers problem, but obviously the history books will say it was a handball and the referee fucked up. But
the thing was as well, the 2 points I took from the game would have been the two goals were actually very avoidable defensively. If you take Nyland and the refereeing decisions aside from it, they're both appalling defending. I mean, Codgers doesn't track back his man. The fact that the cross even comes in for the goal is appalling. The first goal is a shambles from start to finish.
Fifth worst defence in the division, and that's something that's going to be rectified.
Awful. Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, I'm not somebody who... I mean, a few seasons ago, 10 minutes to go and Villa are 1-0 up, you know it's, or they're drawing, you know there's going to be a goal from the opposition. That wasn't like being a nervous disposition. That was just, it's fact. Just common knowledge fact. Yep. Recently, I don't have that feeling. This game, when we missed chance after chance to go 3-1,
it was coming,
you knew it was
it?
Coming. And it was, it literally was one of those games where you knew it was coming. Because they, you know,
yeah,
they were kind
like
of
that this season.
They have like a physicality about them, the Albion, and you just knew it would eventually crack, because under pressure, once Nyland's under pressure, it's not a place you wanted to see him.
Yeah, but the big positive I take from this and the run of games is that we've, you know, in the space of a few weeks, we've gone to Derby, Middlesbrough and West Brom, who've all been in form, and we've taken 7 points out of a possible 9, which, whichever way you look at it, I know everyone's annoyed to not beat the Baggies, that's championship form.
What do you mean championship form? That's what we're in.
Winning the championship form.
Well, we'll get on to that in a second. Just to pick up the loose ends of this game, Grealish went off injured. I think he tweeted that he hopes it's not too bad. Smith seems to imply that it's a sore shin that he's had for several weeks now, and he's just been getting through it. Well, hopefully it's not an issue, because I think...
Well, he's been getting kicked all over the field, hasn't he, all season? So yeah. I'm not surprised.
I think we can survive the Taylor thing, obviously, you know, with Hutton there, and obviously Hutton's got through his ban and all that kind of stuff. It's more if we had a... I thought Axel Tuanzebe showed himself to be good on the ball again. There was
very cool.
He's growing, isn't he?
Yeah.
Every week he's growing into his role. You can start to see the kind of the player that we saw.
There was a few moments where it was almost like Beckenbauer at the back, getting out of tight corners and not panicking at all.
No, he's very cool. He doesn't panic. And there's, like you say, there was a couple of times where I think if it had been a couple of seasons ago that you would have expected the inevitable dispossession and on goal. And in fact, there was a couple of times in the Albion game we thought, where the bloody hell is he going to get out of this? And he found a pass or just mullered his way through with sheer strength. He's a good, really good player, actually.
After the game, there was a bit of an issue at the train station getting out. I think fans were held back despite the police saying that the next train was like 6 minutes away. And then, you know, they were still there for like, you know, 20 minutes or so, one fan said. And then everybody pushed through, and there was a lot of pushing, and apparently got crushed and quite serious, and, you know, type of thing that really should be avoided. But if you were there and you have any insights, do let me know, because no doubt this will be brought up with the police in the next few weeks, or, you know, after Christmas, should I say. But it would be good to have more first-hand opinions to see which ones obviously all tie up.
I mean, all I could say is that I saw it, and my first reaction was, thank God I don't have to get into that mess, because I drove. I think my only worry about, we all understand why the police want to properly manage crowds in and out of the stadium after a derby, we get that. For me, I'm always concerned when you start kettling people through narrow angles, and when you can't get through at the other end, for me that's just, it's asking for trouble. And I think, like you say, I think there's something to be learned there.
Yeah. Right, before we close with the where were you when we were good, just a quick look at the form table, because the last six games are obviously unbeaten, and you'd take that all, you know, every day of the week at the start. And obviously we've pretty much in every game played not only top half teams, but the majority have been top six teams. The interesting thing is, you keep looking at the table, and when you hear like we're six games unbeaten, we've beaten a lot of these top teams, you're looking for like a physical shift in the league table. But when you look at the league table, there actually hasn't really been one. We're still 4 points off the playoffs, but when you look at that top two, and it's when you look at the current form over those six unbeaten games, that Villa are third with 14 points, obviously 4 wins, 2 draws. But it's the two teams in the top of the league in those automatic spots that are actually in the top two of the current form. So in those six games, we haven't actually caught up on the top two. We've actually lost ground. Mm. And that is the concern in terms of the main obsession, to coin Dean Smith's phrase, is automatic promotion. I mean, I'm pretty, you know, at this stage, I'm pretty confident we'll finish in the playoffs. But while it is an obsession, we should still aim for those top spots. So Norwich, we're like 4 wins away from going above them, which is still quite a lot to haul back.
It's a lot
back.
To make up, because the reality is that you've got to win those 4 games and they've got to lose 4 games, and that would be I won't say an unprecedented collapse in form, but I suppose on current performances, it would be a serious turnaround. And I think that what we've got,
I mean,
to,
Norwich should be flying for weeks, haven't they?
We've got to hope for a collapse of one of these teams.
Leeds,
they've got it in them.
We've still got to play them twice, so yes, we can claw back on them, obviously, a bit quicker. Leeds are specialists at collapsing, but we'll find out.
I mean, one thing I'd say, you look at the second half of the season and from now to Christmas, Villa have still got to play all of the seven sides above them at home. Right. So our home form is going to be key here, especially, you know, Leeds before Christmas. I'd go as far as to say already that's a must win, just to get some ground back. You know, I think we've got Norwich right towards the end of the season. That could be an absolutely enormous game.
I think Dean Smith, though, suggested that we have, and I feel the same, we've got it in us, the way we've been playing, as long as we don't mess up on injuries, to go on a long run and to start beating teams. Because what happens after Christmas, once we negotiate this period, is we suddenly have a run of games which we started off the league. When you looked at the start of this season, you thought, oh, that's a nice little entree into the season. We've got the easy fixtures first, and we'll obviously finish the season with the tougher fixtures, but we'll play most of them at home. So if we carry on that momentum, keep winning and picking up points throughout the rest of the Christmas period, and then really get our teeth into the early part of the year and you know, win the majority of those games, then I think that's how we kind of haul back. And then the final part of the season would just be us, you know, having to beat those teams in and around the race to obviously maximize our position.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at them now, and you think January, you know, the turn of the year, if we can be within touching distance over the Christmas season, we entertain QPR, Hull and Ipswich, and then go to Wigan in January. Now, if Villa have aspirations to go up automatically, you're almost looking at January going, you should be winning every game. Yeah. You know, we're still yet to win one of these double headers with two home games in a week this season. That's kind of let us down. That's one thing, actually, last year we were actually very good at. We had a couple of times through the season under Bruce where we'd have a 7-day period with three games and we'd get those three wins. And that tends to be the moments where you get that real upward trajectory in the table. We've kind of tended to win one, draw one, win one, draw one. But as you said, I do think we've got the players and the form to actually go on a very long, sustainable one. One thing I would say, unlike last season, with the way we're playing and the style we have, I don't necessarily think when we lose a game we're going to implode like we did last year. I think we'd turn it around, and as long as you get back on the horse and win the next week, you get back on track. Last season, it seemed to be whenever we'd had a bad result, it'd knock us for six for two or three weeks.
Do you know what? I'd just chip in with that. Looking at the form table, is that there are some massive positives to be had here. That, you know, we're talking about going to some teams who are further down the table in a very important month ahead. We've gone to Middlesbrough, beating them 3-0. We've gone to Derby, and we've beaten them 3-0. Two teams who I think are probably in their minds are probably vying for that final automatic spot and being in and around the playoffs. There are other teams hunting the playoff spots, but I think that we're the team who, you look at the fact that we've Forest was a late equaliser. That was a game we should have won, really. The Albion was a scabby, fortuitous equaliser from their point of view. And I think that the narrative, it changes our feeling and our mood, but we should be optimistic that this is a very different Aston Villa team, a very different feeling around the club. And you know, you only have to look at some of the post-match interviews with players like Bolasie, with Hourihane, with El Ghazi. They're not turning up to draw or maybe scab a win. You know, they're very, very positive in their outlook.
The attitude is to win and to win well. Yeah. This isn't a case of we want to grind out a 1-0 like under the previous regime. This is a case, you know, we're going to go to Derby and we are going to play them off the park. We're going to go to Middlesbrough, we'll play them off the park, and we'll go to West Brom and we'll give them a bloody good game. I don't think there'll be any team in that division will be relishing the prospect of coming to Villa Park with the way we play.
And the statistic that actually backs all that up is when you look at the goals in the last six games in the form table, and we've actually scored over twice the amount of Leeds have, even though Leeds have got that extra point than we have. We've scored 19. We've scored the most out of any team in the last six games. We've got 19. But Norwich, interestingly enough, also have 18. So they're sharpshooters, and they're a little bit tighter at the back. They've only conceded 9, Leeds have conceded 6. But it is the defence, and if we can sort that out. I think a snazzy transfer or two or three probably. A keeper, definitely, and then obviously a centre-back and a left-back. But I think there's the scope there to improve both of those positions in terms of centre-back and left-back.
I think if we tighten up at the back, I don't see the way we play Villa not scoring.
No.
I am yet to see a team who are going to be so solid at the back. And the only team who did look like that were Middlesbrough, and they got torn to pieces.
Yeah, well, they were the best defence. I think we discussed this on the last show.
By quite some way, weren't
they? So there's no team in this league that we can't blow through.
I think that we need to get our heads around how the defensive setup's going to work and whether we're going to stick with the four we've got or roll someone in. I think that if we're going to have a mature, grown-up, honest conversation for anyone who's watched football for any length of time, I think if we've got to address the goalkeeper, you know. We said it last week. We've been fair, I think, and balanced.
Said it the week before. We said it a week before that as well.
We have, and it's not. I think it's a cumulative thing now that the guy's pulled off a couple of decent saves, but he makes me nervous. He makes the team nervous, and I think that if you're one of those top six teams we're talking about on current form or in the league, you just say, right, how do we hurt Aston Villa? I would be circling Nyland all day long.
And just one final thing on that point. This team, as we've just said, are capable of going on a long, and not only unbeaten run, but winning run. And we would have been on a six-game winning run if it wasn't for Nyland, because we would have beaten Forest and we would have beaten the Baggies because of our goalkeeper let us down in both of those games. And as I said previously, many weeks ago, there's only one thing that worries me about this team getting promoted, and that's the goalkeeper. He could compromise it all. He could definitely, and maybe he already has compromised automatic promotion. And this needs to be addressed. There's none of this, give him a few more games to get confidence. Yeah. It's not about confidence. He's an international keeper and he's just not up for this league.
Absolutely. It's not personal. It's a reflection of his performances. It's not his fault he's being picked, but he is not of the standard that we need to get out of this division.
And it's not his fault that it's the not. Rest of the keepers in the squad are bordering on crap as well. I mean, I still have nightmares. Even though he saved a penalty and kept a clean sheet, that was the most woeful performance of goalkeeping I've seen since Enkelman from the Portuguese chap. Morita.
Yeah, I think he'll be back to Madrid. He'll be back to Madrid, won't he? I'd have thought January. I think what a waste of a loan signing that was.
Anyway, that's enough of that. Right, we'll go into the where were you when we were good, which basically is a look back on a moment a game. Is it a game or is it moments? It's a game, really, isn't it?
It could be either, really.
Well, it's a game this time.
All right then.
And this one was actually suggested by Matt Walski, who actually emailed this one. I think he's getting all excited about Christmas games, Villa over the Christmas period. And he casts his mind back to as he says in his own words, I'm going to go for a game that might not immediately spring to mind, but it's one of those where the performance of Savo Milosevic was truly sublime. Is there many games that stand out that where Milosevic was truly sublime? Anyway, it's Coventry at home. December 1995.
Breaker winning it fairly. Johnson. Milosevic wanted to take it. Johnson says, I'll have it. A goal in 12 minutes from Tommy Johnson for Aston Villa. And Savo Milosevic almost took it off him. Johnson made the break inside. That's where the big number nine says, well, I'll have it if you want. And Johnson said, get out of my way. Yellow card shown to Kevin Richardson. He's off. Booked in the opening moments for a line challenge on Mark Draper. Kevin Richardson, the former Aston Villa player, has now been dismissed by the referee. A change in goal for Aston Villa at half-time. Nigel Spink making his first appearance of the season because Mark Bosnich has picked up a hamstring injury. Draper picking up the threads again, finding Charles more convincingly this time. Headed by Noel Whelan deep in defence. Tommy Johnson. It's a good cross. Milosevic! Yes! At long, long last, Savo Milosevic makes himself at home at Aston Villa. Let's get it right. It's far from his first goal for the club, but it is his first goal for the club here in front of the home fans. Solarco finds Telford. Dublin's there, and that's 2-1. Dion Dublin halves the deficit and revives Coventry City's interest in the game. Ekio, Taylor, Draper. Milosevic! Now he started, he's not going to stop. Two for Savo Milosevic, three for a delighted Aston Villa and their fans. Pickering running into trouble in the space of Townsend, and Milosevic! He's got his hat-trick! He's filled his boots today, all right. Savo Milosevic makes it 4-1 for Aston Villa, and three for him. And who knows what a landmark this could prove to be in the Aston Villa career of this young 22-year-old from Serbia. Derby victories always raise the feel-good factor. And nobody in town will feel better than Savo Milosevic tonight. Aston Villa's record and rather speculative signing has struck gold at Villa Park for the first time.
Brian Little was the manager. The subtext to this game was Milosevic was scoring, but he still never scored at Villa Park. Ron Atkinson was returning to Villa Park after he was sacked. Obviously, the previous year he had won the League Cup with Aston Villa, and suddenly he found himself managing Coventry. And back in the day, the great thing about Villa Coventry at Villa Park was Villa had never lost against Coventry at Villa Park. And it was that run that you just wanted to keep on going until your dying day. But unfortunately, who fucked that one up? Was it John Gregory? I can't remember.
I think it was, wasn't it? Was it the Cup game?
Yeah.
If I remember rightly. I think it was the Moldovan Cup game. And then we got battered by them one of the years, didn't we?
Yeah, that was the start of the downward spiral, I think. That was like somebody had taken the foundations from underneath us and it was downhill from there.
Until that amusing afternoon when we relegated them.
Yeah.
God bless Paul Merson's right foot.
That was probably the start of their downfall, which they've never recovered from.
No, I think we were around the top four then, weren't we? December 95. Obviously, I think at that point, we'd already started the season really well. We were consistent. We were really good at the back. York and Milosevic were obviously starting to click at that point. Obviously, York had already started the season really well. Coventry weren't great. And obviously, we came up against a future Villa player in Dion Dublin, who actually scored that day. Kevin Richardson, our former captain, was obviously playing for Coventry that day. And if I remember rightly, at that time, I think we were, it was just before we were kind of in the middle of our Coca-Cola Cup run, en route to Wembley Glory.
Which was when Milosevic shined.
Yeah. But had Milosevic got his nickname at that point, Missilosevic?
I believe he had by then. Yeah, I think he had. I think it had been well earned by that point.
He came to the club and I think he's on public record as saying his target was 25 goals for the season because that's what he was kind of averaging in Yugoslavia, if it was Yugoslavia then. I think it was, wasn't it?
I think it was, wasn't he, from Partizan Belgrade, where he was the record signing, wasn't he, at the time?
They would always joke that he had no right foot, so we'd spent, was it 3 million, which, was a, let's say it's, what's 3 million, 3.5 million then? It's probably what 10, 12 is nowadays, would you say?
Probably more, to be honest, for a European striker.
And he was so left-footed. I think I'd never seen anybody more one-footed at that stage.
No, you never watched me play then, David. I was incredibly... It's like a wand, though.
Because my dad would always say he couldn't believe that professional footballers went two-footed because he always made out that he was two-footed. And he always saw it as like a disgrace. But he's right, because you look at more and more footballers nowadays and you can't believe, how can you call yourself professional? Like, if you got a lazy eye, you patch up the good one so the other one gets better. You'd do everything as a child to be both-footed. But all these kids slip through now with one foot. But Milosevic was so left foot. But the irony was, in this game, to get back to the game, to break his Villa Park duck, I think his first two goals were scored with his head.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yep, a sublime finish for the third. And he should have had a fourth. There was a real Milosevic moment before he made his hat-trick, where he has a tap-in from the penalty spot and somehow manages to drag it wide, which is what everybody for the previous 3 months had been watching.
But also, Dwight York had a goal chalked off for offside. And in the build-up to that, because I think it was Milosevic who played him through, Milosevic had his shirt tugged in the penalty area, and that would have been a penalty if the ref had actually seen it. So there could have been more than four, for sure. And I mean, the best goal in my book was Tom... And then probably man of the match. I mean, the goals obviously always make it the easy choice to make Milosevic man of the match. But Tommy Johnson was a real live wire throughout the whole of that game. And his opening goal was fantastic, where he just picked it up. Bit of a kind of Bjarnason against Wolves type distance. And he went on this kind of solo, mazy kind of run and finished with a plum to make it 1-0. And then a few minutes later, he got Kevin Richardson, former Villa captain, who obviously a big run had taken from Villa to Coventry, got him sent off for two yellows. So we went in at half time, 1-0 up, and then obviously one man up. And I think Richardson had a broken nose when he went off, because they were saying that he was off for dangerous play. And I think Big Ron post-match was saying, oh, the irony is he's got done for dangerous play, but he's gone off with a broken nose. Anything else?
I mean, what my observations, I mean, just to pick up on those things, were that it was the formation was quite... I remember back in the 95 season that Villa played this wing-back 5-5-3-2 type of system with Wright and Charles that had, to be honest, had mixed successes in the end for Little. But there's a nice balance in the team. You know, you had Southgate, who was essentially a defensive midfielder who had just broken into the England team at that point. He's a year away from missing that infamous penalty against Germany, don't forget. Alongside McGrath, Ekiog, probably as he was coming into his peak Villa years. And then the midfield, you know, you've got Ian Taylor, you know, really looking, showing all the best of his qualities when he was at Villa, alongside a young Lee Hendry, who was quite tenacious then, and Mark Draper, who we've since know to be a better.
Was he the record signing at the time, Draper?
Draper, we spent a lot of money to get him from Leicester. I don't know whether he was record signing.
I think Milosevic was that summer, wasn't he? I think Milosevic pipped him a few weeks later. And obviously we had Andy Townsend in the middle as well. Now, that was probably those three in the middle, with Townsend, Taylor and Draper. You look at, you know, a balanced midfield, and those three could do everything.
Yeah, and also...
They could all tackle, they could all pass, they could all score.
And also Southgate took that three-man defence to his England...
he did.
World Cup journey as well. Do you miss, just finally, do you miss playing the Cov? Because it is obviously a local game. I mean, I didn't mind playing them back in the day just because of that record when we were unbeaten at home. It was all about obviously keeping that going until it went kind of crash bang in the end.
They were one of those teams, I suppose, because I was a bit younger. I never really had a view on them particularly. I never even saw it as a rivalry. Yeah. Because they were obviously at that point we were a far superior side. It never really seemed like a particularly fierce rivalry. I mean, we were discussing earlier. We saw the attendance. The ground was half empty for the game, so it wasn't exactly a big crowd pull. Or
I was used to think it was a big game for Coventry, and it was sort of coming into the years of where, you know, I'd probably been a season ticket holder as a kid for a couple of seasons before 95. That they were always a team for me as I was growing up who were almost about to get relegated, or they would just stay up on the last day. They were always in that mix. And one of the key memories, I suppose, would be fast forwarding a few years, would be the season that we relegated them. You know, that they were, you know, that in classic Coventry style, they were clinging on, and they were 2-0 up at half time. Villa turned it round, and it was Juan Pablo Angel's first goal for the club after some, you know, it was a magical performance from Merson on that day. And those are the kind of, I remember Villa fans reveling in the dark arts and the macabre, if you like, of that day, because that they went down holding their signs of we'll be back, and sadly from a football point of view that they haven't, and their club's been.
Do you think Villa fans wallow in the despair of others more than they celebrate the victories of their own?
We've suffered enough despair of our own. I think that if there is such a thing as karma, then it certainly has come round.
I mean, back in the Villa's League Cup win the year before in 94 was actually the first trophy to come to the Midlands since Coventry won the FA Cup against Spurs, which was a classic 3-2 against Spurs. John Sillett was the manager, and when you looked at John Sillett, he looks old school, but you couldn't imagine him being a manager in today's football, especially in the top two tiers.
I think it's just Coventry are it's a sign of the general decline, you know, in West Midlands football, really. Yeah. You look at these teams that used to be relative forces, you know, Villa, Albion, Coventry, all languishing. You know, I wouldn't wish what's happened to Coventry on any club or supporters. I think they've just been run into the ground by truly appalling ownership.
They haven't even got their own ground potentially next season.
No, it's a rugby stadium again, isn't it? Now, I mean, it would be quite fun to get them in the cup, just to take an army to the Rico, as much as it's an absolutely soulless stadium. But, you know, they managed to take, I think it was like 40,000 to Wembley last season for a Auto Glass Trophy or whatever it's called this year. So there's still a fan base there, but I think there's such a detachment between the club and the city over there that it's a real sort of sorry state of affairs. Yeah. You know, will they ever be back to where they want to be? Who knows? You know, I think if they did, it would be a real great comeback story, but they're certainly not one of those teams that I sort of hold the same sort of local resentment for as the likes of Blues or any of the other, you know, the other rivals, because they're so far down the pecking order now. You know, they've obviously fallen below Walsall.
As I said at the start of this segment, Villa versus Coventry was the only Premier League derby in the West Midlands.
for quite some time as well, wasn't it?
There isn't one at the moment. To back up what you've said about the decline of West Midlands football, if Villa do go up, I mean, I wouldn't mind if the Baggies go up with us, or Forest, you know, even though that's technically East Midlands, but it would be good to get Midlands teams back in the Premier League.
Two European winners.
I looked at the Premier League table, and apart from that top 6-7, Bournemouth, I was looking at Bournemouth's situation. They hadn't won in the six games before they played Liverpool, but they were eighth. And you're just thinking, what kind of league is this? How can you remain top eight after losing six games, after 15 games? I mean, it's that league is so there for the taking for anybody like Villa or Forest to get their act together. They can land in that league and finish top 10 if they get their act together.
I mean, even taking just Villa aside, the second City should have at least one good Premier Division football club. And you look at, like, geographically, and we've discussed this before, but you look at the teams or even the towns that have overtaken Birmingham in the Premier Division. You know, we're getting blown out of the water by Bournemouth and Leicester, Brighton, Watford, Cardiff, Palace, Burnley, even really small places like Huddersfield. Yeah.
Well, Bournemouth Stadium,
it's shocking.
It's not even 12,000. That tells you all you need to know. And, you know, they didn't build Grand Central Station for this, put it that way. Right. On that note, as I will be using Grand Central Station to get out of this city in a few days' time for a week, as well as this show coming to you, I will also get out an interview with the author of Ticket to the Moon, which is the rise and fall of Aston Villa around the European Cup years, what led up to it, and then how it kind of spiraled into decline after it. Heartily recommended, because it's the author, Richard Sydenham, had access to, I think he had a couple of days where he could just look through all the storage room of the, which held all the board notes and all the records. So he got to source that and had access to all the transfer fees and the minutes to the meetings. So it's all there in black and white. It's definitely worth a read. I've interviewed him, and I will be rolling that out as a podcast very shortly after you listen to this. So until then, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
See you later.
My old man said.
Our obsession is to get into the top two this season, or the top six if we can't make the top two.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.